Welcome to Let's Talk Land, weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, especially for real estate agent and realtors. Learn from the experts. This is free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant with United Country Real Estate, Sutton Properties, our new company name, along with our co-host, Teresa Martin, who's one of our agent and is out showing property today, so she won't be with us, and that's fine. Buying and selling homes, land or farms, or want to auction your property in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our new office is at 102 East Main Street next to BB&T Bank in downtown Pilot Mountain, North Carolina. Please make a note of our changes. Our website is www.allsuttonproperties, that's A-L-L Sutton, S-U-T-T-O-N, properties.com. Please make a note, Dr. Barbie's Ask the Doctor show will now follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. Make sure you stay tuned. Dr. Barbie always has something of interest. Our guest today is Sean Terrell, president of United Country Auction Services and co-founder of several other businesses. Sean brings wealth to auction experience and insight to our executive management team. Sean also has over 25 years of auction management, professional bid calling expertise in our industry. He's a former board of director of the National Auctioneers Association and past chairman of the president of the Oklahoma State Auctioneers Association. Sean has been crowned the champion auctioneer in multiple states during the career and recognized as one of the industry's authorities on conducting auctions. And also our guest today is Trina Turner, who's executive assistant for United Country Auction Services. Tina Turner's services as president of Sean Terrell's right hand by assisting an auction team with development, maintenance, and marketing auction tools and resources. Trina has used her 14 years of experience in sales and project management to bring a fresh and unique perspective to auction project. Together, they host a show we want to talk about today. They have their own podcast called The Sale Ring. So tell us about your podcast, guys, and welcome.
Lou, thanks for having us on your show.
You're more than welcome.
Yeah, The Sale Ring, that podcast show was kind of conceptualized a few years ago because of the niche markets we serve and the amount of interest in those specialty markets out there. There's a lot of communication or miscommunication, so we thought maybe a strategy of a podcast show with experts in those various SPGs or specialty markets would be something that would be of interest to the realtor community and also to the consumers and listeners. So we've been pretty proud of it. It's gained traction over the years.
How is it? What podcast are you on? What are the different channels?
So The Sale Ring is featured on most podcasts. It's syndicated out to most of the podcast listening sites or hosting sites. Podbean, Spreaker, we're on, what are some of the others?
Stitcher and Apple Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Basically, if you can't find it, you're not actually listening to podcasts anywhere.
So one of the smart things that Trina did when we first rolled that podcast is, what's the hosting company's name?
Blueberry.
So Blueberry has a syndication portal out there out to, I believe it's about 56 different sites that it syndicates our podcast out to. But the mainstream ones out there that if people have an Apple product and they go through iTunes, you can find The Sale Ring podcast on iTunes, on Apple Music or Google Play, and so on. So we've made it very accessible to the listening audience.
So the Sale Ring podcast show features industrial leading professionals like we do on our show in straight talk discussions regarding the real estate auction industry. And you're backed by the largest integrated organization of real estate and auction professionals in America. These podcast shows are specially geared towards shining a light on important topics that drive our professionals like regulational change, marketing techniques, advancements in technology, training and education, and the latest news and trends in the real estate industry auction. So we kind of parallel, we specialize obviously in anything related to land and you guys are using auctions as your base, but then you're also expanding that out as we do as well. So congratulations on your show, and I think Therese and I are going to be invited to be on your show next week, and we look forward to that too.
Yeah, we're excited about having you on the show, you and Therese Liu. And just so the listeners on your show know that when they listen to the Sell Ring podcast show, it's not specifically about United Country, those brokers. We kept it somewhat separate from that from the corporation or United Country Real Estate that we work for, and made it more of an industry show. And then it'll have a wide variety of topics. It won't be just auctions or just traditional real estate sales. There may be, we featured people that talk about different types of disposition strategies on property. We featured people that talk about, Skyson Financial has been on that show that talks about investment, different types of investment strategies for whenever you dissolve property. Drone on Demand has been a guest on there to talk about aerial drone and photography. So it's a wide range of topics.
And great subjects to talk about, and it's great. Let's talk about land education just for a second, which is the reason for our show here. And this will lead us into United Country and a little bit of their history, and then we can drive into auctions and why and some of the new techniques, which would be important to our audience. But, you know, when we go to real estate school, and you guys are in Missouri, and I see, Sean, you're licensed in multiple states. I'm also licensed in Virginia, and they have different requirements. Each state does, established by their state real estate commissions. But basically in North Carolina, we have to have 180 hours of classroom instruction, which is tested, and you have to pass the classroom, and then you have to take the state exam, and then you have to take the national exam, which deal in those specific topics, and pass those, and you become, in our state, a provisional broker. And then once you do that, you have 18 months to take three more 30-hour classes to become a full-fledged broker. Right now, we have over 111,000 licensed agents in the state of North Carolina, with about 70 of those actively practicing, 70,000 actively practicing. So, you know, we got one on every corner, it appears, but that's okay. We love our agents out there servicing our public. But my point is, in all those syllabuses, they spend about 10, maybe 15 minutes talking about land and land issues. And quite frankly, the instructors are not trained to talk about land, so it's very limited other than what's in the syllabus. So our industry, the National Association of Realtors, which were over 100 years old, with about 1.4 million realtors, and to do that, you have to take our Code of Ethics or Self-Policing course, and it's actually done every 2 years now to keep your license active. But in that Code of Ethics, Article 11 says realtors should not be involved in a real estate transaction, I'm paraphrasing, that they do not have proper training or education. And then it lists the different vocations like residential, commercial, property management, auctions, international real estate, appraisal. And it never had the four-letter word land, and I'm going to be braggadocious. In 2008, I brought that to the National Professional Standards Group, which monitors and augments and changes these our bylaws, and it was adopted now as a specialty. Land is now a specialty. So we're finally recognized after all these years. But the second thing is we have different organizations in the Realtors Land Institute, which are now about 77, 78 years old. We're part of the national organization as CCIM is for commercial and GRI is for residential and so on. There's quite a few organizations that specialize advanced education. And the Realtors Land Institute actually has 10 classes. They're two-day, 16-hour courses that you have to pass the tests on. One of them is actually a three-day course. It's a spreadsheet course. Cap rates, internal rate of returns relating to investment land programs. I've been able to teach the Land 101 class, which is our base required course, since 2003 all over the United States. And then, of course, in North Carolina, we have 8 hours of continuing education, and we have to have 4 hours required and 4 hours elective. And I created, with the North Carolina Real Estate Education Foundation 5 years ago, the first land class, and the only land class offered in the state of North Carolina called Introduction to Land Brokerage. And I'm also finding that throughout the United States, there are not any other land courses offered by any of the states out there at the CE level. So that's why I started this show a couple years ago, to help spread education, free land education. So, and you guys are right there helping our industry and doing what you're doing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We fully support land education, as you well know. United Country Auction Services actually conducts the auction at the Land Institute's National Land Conference every year at the end of March. So we're very familiar with them as an organization as well.
So we see each other each year at the National Land Conference, Lou, and that's always, it's a rewarding conversation with those land brokers, because they're doing exactly what you just hinted about prior to this, is they're trying to improve the broker education and the training for brokers that are going to service clients out there in the land industry. And we want to be big proponents of that. One of the things we pride ourselves on is United Country Real Estate. We are the largest rural land seller by a wide, wide margin in the U.S., and we've held that position for many, many years. You know, founded in 1925 as United Farm Agency, we've expanded that into vertical markets or different SPGs, or special property groups, if you will, that feature lake properties, coastal and waterfront, golf properties. There's about 40 different verticals we serve. But at the root of what this company was built on and does is it serves that land market, that rural land marketplace. And we also want to be good proponents of land education.
Hey, our guest today is Sean Terrell and Tarina Turner. This is Let's Talk Land. So we're with Sean Terrell and Tarina Turner with United Country Auction Services. And you guys are in Kansas City, Missouri. I came out there when we bought our franchise a number of years ago and spent 5 days at the casino where we had our classes, which was kind of unique. And you couldn't go anyplace because if you didn't have a car, you were out in the middle of nowhere. So it kind of worked out really good. But it was really most informative. I think it was one of the largest classes that they had. It was, I think it was over 50-some agents there. So the Duffys really put on a good show. And as you mentioned, United Country was the very first franchise ever established in the United States in 1925. And we're very proud of, we published the very first real estate publication, Real Estate Property for Sale, in 1928. And it's been honored and housed at the Smithsonian Institute. So we got quite a background. You know, it's interesting. I was building a national website years ago with some partners like Lands of America and Land Watch, actually at the same time. But I was doing canvassing as I traveled, and I would go into a restaurant or a group of people, and I'd say, if you wanted to sell your home, name me three national franchises. And they would rattle off three, you know. And then I'd say, if you want to sell your land or farm, name the franchise that you would call. And about 20% of them said other organizations, but about 80% of them said United Country. And it kind of blew my mind. So we do have a lot of recognition. We are known for rural areas, rural residential, as well as land and farms, commercial even, and, of course, auctions. And then now we've got our specialty marketing, incredible website. How many people go to our website on a monthly basis? It's a crazy number.
You know, all of United Country websites totaled up about 3.5 million per month.
Boy, I'd like to have that on my listing audience. How about you?
Yeah, that's great exposure for sure. And, you know, we own and operate about 3,000 websites in those specialty and SPG market segments.
Right. We have the national. We have our Sutton Properties website. And then I have my Lou Jewell United Country website. So it's quite integrated. And one of the best websites. And we don't buy this outside. We have our own staff and our own computers. It's all internal. And we have a staff of about 160 that are. What's the staff count now? Our support staff at Kansas.
We've got around 75.
75. Okay.
Here, counting
yep.
The in-house and the field staff together.
Right, and then Trina, you're part of the specialty marketing group, right? Yeah, which is part of that, right?
Yes.
So, you know, we state of the art, and we can talk about that. I want to back up just for a second. You know, the Realtors Land Institute, we have started about, 20 years ago now, annually, instead of having our conferences at the National Association of Realtors annual meetings in mid-year in Washington in May. We actually have our own land conference, the RLI Land Conference. It'll be in San Antonio, Texas, this March, into March or into April 1st. And, of course, I'll be there, and I hope you guys are there too. But I want to learn about the auction industry. You guys, like the Realtors Land Institute, and by the way, if you go back in history, the auction services were actually under the National Association of Realtors for many, many years and broke apart and started their own organization. Is that correct?
You know, actually, you're educating me a little bit, Lou. That may be before my time. You know, about 30 years.
Yeah. But,
and, you know, I think prior to that, definitely back into the late 70s, the National Auctioneers Association has been housed and was formed here. And it's here in Kansas City, Kansas, which Kansas City is where we reside. It works in tandem or in conjunction with the National Association of Realtors. They're both national organizations, and each are representing and serving those in individual or select markets.
So if I was interested in getting my auction license, and I mentioned we have a corporate license, that's separate. We don't have to go to school for that. We just have to qualify. But if I wanted to be an auctioneer, crier, or in the auction services, what's the process?
You know, it depends on the state that you operate in, whether they have an auctioneer's license and a licensing board or not. Some states do not require an auctioneer's license. Other states have a very stringent auctioneer's license. But to get into the business, typically most people go to auction school. Those auction schools are going to be anywhere from an 8 to a 9 day course, fairly rigorous courses, because they're trying to get a lot of hours in during that 8 or 9 days. It takes people away from their jobs or away from their life out there to go to a place, to educate. So those days could be 8 to 10 hour long days, and they're generally going to expose you to a variety of different auction markets: the auto industry, the livestock industry, the general merchandise or real estate industry. You'll work on the chant, on the bid calling itself, but you're also going to work on auction marketing. You're going to work on auction law, different types of auction facilitation and how to handle different scenarios in the auction industry. It's a well-rounded course.
And well-established, too. I know here in North Carolina we have several schools, but Mendenhall is one of the ones that we hear most frequently. And they've been around, 40, 50 years, I think, maybe even longer. So
now, Mendenhall is one of the older schools in the U.S., and they do a great job.
So what type of courses? Are these broken down into courses like RLI? I mentioned we have 10 courses. They're two-day courses. Or these, it's all run together. It's 9 days, one course.
These are all kind of ran together in the auction industry. For the basic auctioneering school or basic course, you're getting a condensed version of everything in that 9 days.
Okay.
And there's some specialty training after the fact that the National Auctioneers Association has segmented out. If you want to be a benefit auctioneer, they have a course called BAS, or Benefit Auctioneer Specialist. They have courses for certified estate specialists, an accredited auctioneer of real estate, the AARE course. They have a graduate personal property appraiser course, GPPA. They offer a wide variety of industry or segmented courses out there for people that want to advance their career in a select discipline.
So, Sean, akin to the Realtors Land Institute, our designation is ALC, which stands for Accredited Land Consultant, which I've been one since 2004, getting my license in 94, and it took me about 5 years to get it. It's quite difficult. We have about 1,300 members nationwide that are members of the Realtors Land Institute, and I believe we're just a little over 500 designees that carry the ALC designee. Our website, by the way, is www.rlilandnet. So if you're buying or selling land, investing, then you need to go to that site and work with someone who's had some land education training would be my recommendation, because there are many benefits for that. For the for your industry, your main designation, I guess, is what, the CAI, Certified Auctioneer Institute designation. Is that correct?
That's generally held at the senior level out there. So it's the equivalent of getting a master's degree in the auction area or auction arena is the Certified Auctioneers Institute. That's a three-year course of study. The classes each year are about a week long. They're held at Indiana University. And I've been teaching there for a number of years. I teach the business planning and strategy course for CAI. And it's a three-year course of study. So you'll have, in a class, you'll have class one, class two, and class three that are cycling through each year at the same time.
Okay. And then that's renewed annually just like we are. Do you have to do updates on that, or once you have the designation, are there any other further requirements other than paying your dues?
Kind of updates that they send out. They also recommend that you take some of the specialty courses that we talked about earlier. And now they have instituted what they call CAI Next. That's for graduates to go get kind of continued a brush-up course or additional education. And they hold those generally every 2 to 3 years. They'll have another CAI Next course.
So, Trina, I want to talk about you and what you do for our auction services. Let's give you a little shout-out.
Okay. So I've actually been with United Country for 18 years and working with Sean on the auction division for probably 14, 15 years. And I just love United Country. Basically, my role here is I support all of the training and marketing efforts from United Country Auction Services on the corporate level. So any of the individual classes that you might take at our national convention, or we hold a three-day national auction summit every September, I pretty much lay all of that training out and get the speakers all lined up and things like that. And, yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
How many on your staff there?
What's that?
How many is in your staff?
In my staff? It's me and Sean and a field agent, and then we're supported by the sales team as well, so.
And how many auctioneers are we facilitating in our organization?
About 347.
And we're the largest in the country, right?
Oh, yeah. Nation's largest integrated auction and real estate company.
Are we in all states, and are we international?
We are not in all 50 states. We are active in about, how many states are you based on?
There's going to be a few states out there that we may not have. Currently have an auctioneer in, but I'm going to say I believe it's 45 or 46 states out of 50 that we operate in.
Yep. And we are international as well. We have offices in Panama and Costa Rica and Mexico. So
we're getting out there, aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay, now let's go into auctions just a little bit. If Rodney had a call today, someone was saying, you know, why would I list my property versus auction my property? What do we tell people? Why do we want to auction versus just listing a property?
You know, it's that's a common question that comes up quite a bit, and I think, you know, holistically you want to think about the real estate market out there, that most of the sellers, a lot of times, they may not be an auction candidate, depending on a couple of factors. And here's some of the variables. One, do they have the ability to sell the property for what would be deemed as an auction value or a cash value? A lot of times there may be some debt load or there may be some other requirements out there that limit their ability to sell that for a price less than what's owed on it. Motivation always comes into play. And there's two different types of auctions. So you imagine if you have property, let's say real estate, and you want to sell that real estate. Is it something that has a lot of pent-up demand? It has a lot of attractiveness, and it's going to have a strong market presence out there, people that are competing to buy that property. Or is it going to be relatively soft in the marketplace? You know, is it something that is going to sell, and it's going to sell at option for a value, but that value could potentially be less because of the condition of it, desirability. Maybe there's an oversaturation of properties in the marketplace, which obviously affects supply and demand. It could be more of a liquidation type auction than actually a retail auction. And that goes back to that initial statement of, if that's the case, is that a price that would be attractive to the seller, or would the seller even have the opportunity to sell the property because they, you know, the debt load may be higher than that price?
Right. So not all properties are candidates. One of the things that Matt Gallimore, that I mentioned earlier that we're co-venturing with in Virginia, been experimenting with, because of this hot market, especially in the residential, and I want our listeners to listen careful to this, is as opposed to just calling an agent up and listing your property MLS on the traditional way, putting a sign up, having open houses, et cetera, is start out with an auction. And what he's finding, and I don't know if you guys are experimenting with this, is that they're usually getting a higher offer because, you know, when you list a piece of property, you establish a price, $200,000. Well, it's not going to go higher than that, usually, unless now in this market, hot market, we get multiple bids, which we're seeing quite frequently, and even selling property more than what the list price is. But because of that, it really is that technique right now with the standard listing and multiple offers is almost like an auction. But what we're also seeing is it's alienating a lot of buyers because, you know, by 5 o'clock you got to highest and best bid in, and you got to have a letter of approval, and you know, maybe your banker's out and you can't get it, so you don't get to bid on the auction because you don't have all the requirements met. So we're playing around with that, and we're looking forward to it. And by the way, our guest today is Sean Terrell and Trina Turner. This is Let's Talk Land. So here we go. All right, so we've kind of talked about why you would auction versus just listing a piece of property, and I kind of threw out a new idea out there. Have you guys heard of that, by the way?
Auction versus listing?
On a residential listing presentation, we give them an option. Would you like to just list it, which is fine, and by the way, start packing your bags, or let us throw another idea. Let's do an auction, and I think we can get you more money than what the CMA says or what we feel like the market will bear.
United Country corporate level, we kind of endorse what we call a blended method model, where it'll go either as a listing or an auction for X amount of time, and then can convert back and forth between the two.
Yeah, and you can switch back and forth. The difference being, if you list a property, you know, there's a commission involved, which is negotiable. We don't talk about that in our real estate educational courses because we can't do that. It's against law. But that's totally negotiable. But in the auction business, usually there is a marketing fee that's paid up front once a contract is signed to do an auction. And that can vary. And let's talk about that and some of the services, if you want, what a person might expect.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're exactly right. That marketing fee, a lot of the options that we see, that the buyer actually pays what you would call the commission through a buyer's premium. Leaving the seller not having to pay that, but the seller is having to come up with upfront marketing costs to keep their skin in the game as well. And that marketing can entail everything from custom websites, videos, all of your internet and electronic marketing, as well as print marketing, signage. The list can go on and on. It just can be marketed. We'll do it, and we've seen it done, and we're able to do it. So,
and that's negotiable, too. I know in certain auctions, you know, we in a situation for a client really didn't have the resources. It sounds crazy, but they couldn't spend $2,000, $3,000 up front. So, you know, we'll back end that and recoup it on the back end at the auction. So, you know, we don't encourage that, but I'm just saying we want to help people out. And I've been involved in that on a couple occasions where, you know, we got the job done. And
absolutely. About it, $100,000 house, approximate value house, isn't going to need the same amount of marketing as a $4 million house, or, you know, a farm or a horse farm, things like that. You're going to have to go into specialty markets to get the buyers those bigger and specialized properties, and that's going to cost a little more for those sellers. So
yeah, you'll have to determine where the buyer base is coming from, where the likely buyer is. It going to be, you know, close in? Is this the kind of property that somebody in the nearby community or within a 20-mile radius should buy, likely buy this property, or is it going to take an outside influence to the market? Also, when you talk about the auction and leveraging that in the initial conversation versus listing for a period of time and then going to auction, I think that strategy works well, but the first question you have to answer is there enough pent-up demand in this market? Is there enough, you know, a lot of the residential real estate markets are pretty robust right now, and that kind of philosophy is working. We had an agent here in Kansas City that listed a home last Friday. They put it in the MLS. Between Saturday and Sunday morning, they showed the property 7 times, and Monday morning had it under contract. There's a robust or kind of an explosive market where that auction method of marketing would have driven a lot of people there, possibly even accelerated the price on it and got a higher offer out of the auction method of marketing.
Yeah, and
the other thing you have to think about with auctions is if they're not the norm in a market, the very first thing that the consumer's going to ask is why. Because you're doing something different, they're going to want to know, is there a reason why you're not listing this for sale traditionally and just taking offers and showing, why are you selling it at auction? Or more often you hear, is there something wrong with it? Is it in foreclosure? Is there a foundation issue, or is it under some kind of a stressor that's creating this? No. You know, we just have such a robust market right now and a lot of offers. This is a systematic way to bring those offers in, to basically kind of funnel through those and pick the highest and best offer and put it under contract in a reasonable amount of time. So
yeah. Well, some of the things that I've seen in my experience is sometimes we don't sell the property at auction. Very rare. Normally we'll sell it, okay, we'll negotiate the price. But what we'll find is that accelerated marketing, okay, which is different than just traditional marketing, putting it in an MLS, putting it on your website, doing the social media, you know, putting it in the real estate guide, blah, 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 okay, is that we do that extra. It's in the newspapers. It may be on the radio. You know, there's pent-up energy. People know that on March the 30th at 11 o'clock, that property's probably going to be sold. And if I'm not prepared to buy it, then it's different than the traditional marketing.
That's an amazing thing when you create
urgency.
And you create that sense of urgency in the marketplace, and it puts a deadline. So you're basically funneling everybody's decision process to a specific date and time so that you can move forward. Versus putting it on the market for a year and, you know, minimal price reductions and things like that. Yeah, it can definitely be advantageous to the seller.
Yeah. And we'll find sometimes that we'll actually sell it a day or two or a week or 2 weeks after the auction because that particular buyer was not in the position for whatever reason physically there, although you can do it electronically now. You can call in bids, you can go to websites and all the technologies out there, but maybe financially they had to achieve something to be able to do that. So they'll come back. We'll find that if we don't sell it at the day of auction, usually we'll sell it within a very short period of time to someone that wasn't available.
Yeah, that's very common, Luke.
And the other thing that I like about auctions too is you're selling it where is, as is, or as is, where is, okay? So, you know, as an auction process, we put together the due diligence package, okay, of all the disclosures, the deeds, the tax cards, the aerial maps, the topos, the floodplains, the soil analysis, the whatever that, you know, whatever's required of that property. And that is given to the public prior to the auction. And it's up to the person that's interested in buying the property to do their due diligence prior to the auction. So the day of the auction, they should have gone ahead and done all the required things that they want to do and be prepared to buy it then. So, you know, that takes a burden, too, off of the traditional selling. Again, I'm talking about houses where you got the radon, the lead-based paint if it's 78, built in 1978 or earlier. Other disclosures, oil and gas and mineral rights that we have here in North Carolina, disclosure and so on. So, again, that auction takes that part of the equation out of there, and it's a clean sell. And usually, you know, there's a 10% deposit that's put down at the auction, non-refundable usually. that if you don't close, and usually it's a 30-day close. So, you know, we'll work with them 40 days, 45 days, but normally there's a short-term close. So a person that's looking to liquidate property in a timely fashion, they don't want to wait 6 months on the market. They want to go ahead and liquidate the property for whatever their reasons are. The auction method facilitates that. Is that correct?
That is correct. And there's a misconception. We get this quite a bit in the auction business. I think with troubled properties, people think they can sometimes mask those or hide those issues out there by selling it at auction. It doesn't relieve you as a seller to not report any known issues, or, you know, if there's contamination issues or if there's radon gas, anything that you know about the property, you're still bound to disclose that to the buyers. So
absolutely.
It doesn't relieve you of your liability to disclose anything that you know about the property, but the buyer is buying it knowingly, subject to all of those false defects. So hopefully it's priced appropriately. The other thing that I think is worth noting on here, there are certain governmental requirements that are that like federal law. The lead-based paint disclosure is a federal law. It doesn't, you know, the auction business doesn't circumvent that. That's still a required document at auction to be completed, as well as a few others. So that sometimes gets mistaken in the auction business. Well, if I sell it at auction, I can just keep my mouth shut about these known issues out here, and I'll just push that problem off on the buyer. That's not good for the industry, and it's also not good for the auction company if you get caught doing that. It's hard to keep your buyer base out there and keep that consumer confidence if that's how you transact business.
Yeah. So, you know, in slow markets, auctions create a special focus on your property. And in hot markets, auctions can prevent you from underselling in a hot market, as we've talked about. And then in a changing market, you got new developments and shifts in the economy and more. So, you know, it really lends it. An auction really lends itself no matter where we are in our economic up and down, okay, posture.
Yes, sir. I'll run something by you right now.
So yeah, please.
Price discovery, when you have issues with a property, price discovery or appropriate pricing can be very difficult because you're trying to mitigate circumstances, either inherent or known problems or risk in a property, and you're trying to figure out, well, what is the pricing threshold out there that the market would pay for that, knowing these instances with the property, these issues. We've had homes before that have had severely damaged foundations, and they understand what the retail price of the home without foundation issues would be in a market. They've also got estimates of what it would take to repair the foundation from two or three different companies. So in theory, you could deduct that price off of the retail price and say this is what the property should be worth. However, if you don't have the capital to repair the foundation and you've got a product that's damaged that you need to sell to the marketplace, they're not always willing to pay full value out there and inherit the problem. I'll use hypothetical numbers, but a $300,000 house retail sales, it's going to cost $20,000 to repair the foundation. So in theory, that's a $280,000 house. But as you know, the consumer on $20,000 worth of repair to the foundation, they're going to be more skeptical about what other issues could there be with this property.
Yeah.
So the auction and leveraging a multiple participant bidding event out there, it allows you to find that threshold of what the market's willing to bear under these circumstances with the property. Retail sales, traditional sales, it's very, very difficult to find where should we list the price. We don't know what to put it on the market at because we don't know what the market will bear, and that's where the auction could be successful.
Yep, especially unique properties.
Exactly.
So I decide I want to have an auction. How much time do I need before, you know, because you do this pretty quick. What do you recommend in terms of preparing for the auction, in terms of all your advertising, due diligence work, and so on, before the auction date's established?
You know, typically with auctions out there, the old formula is 30 days of marketing, sell the property at auction, 30 days to close. So within a 60-day turnaround, have the property converted into cash. Now, there are unique properties. There's select, you know, if you're selling something that's maybe involves aircraft or an airport, and you need to get into some type of a regional airline magazine or an airport, you know, a fly-in destination magazine, those may be monthly magazines, so you have to extend that marketing time out longer to hit those publications. I use that as one of many examples, but there's some certain circumstances where that gets extended into 45 days or 60 days, but normally 30 days is enough time to notify the consumer, to let them come and look at the property, conduct their due diligence, go back and get financially prepared to participate in the auction, and then actually participate and buy the property.
And normally you'll have like an open house or open land or, you know, a preview a week, 2 weeks prior to, and you'll have more than one date. So the people that want to come actually physically check the property out, you know, they have an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Typically you'll see at least one, more likely two of those days
right.
to open up the window for any potential buyer so that they can come and do all of their due diligence during that time, take a look at the property, and get the full walkthrough, just like any other open house situation would be. We have heard of a couple companies that don't do that, and it just doesn't really work. If you don't open it up, or in a lot of foreclosure instances, they won't allow you access to the property either. You're missing a whole buyer, you know, base there by not allowing people to see and view and walk around the property. So
there's an old mainstay in the auction business that says a well-informed buyer is always going to be a better buyer.
So absolutely.
Our job is to educate the public and the consumer, the buying audience, about the property, get them well prepared to participate, then you're going to have a lot more vigorous event.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting, and we've experienced this, I have, in several of the auctions over the years, is actually selling the property prior to the auction date and time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'll give you a quick little story. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, they just want
there,
it that day. So.
There was a subdivision outside of Charlotte. We've got Lake Norman, one of the largest man-made lakes in the country. And some of the most wealthy homes demographically in the state of North Carolina is around that lake. But there was a subdivision a number of years ago. This goes back probably 15 years, maybe 18 years ago. And it was a subdivision that had been started, and the developers, the economy turned, and, you know, they actually lost it, and then it was resold to another group of investors, and they were having trouble selling it out, and so they decided to have an auction. So they did all the promotion and so on, and the auction was like at 11 o'clock on Friday, and they had it on site with the tent and the, you know, all the speakers and all the information there. And this limousine pulled up, this white limousine, like the longest limousine you've ever seen, with all the whistles and bells, the tinted glass, and it actually pulled right up to the auctioneer's tent. And the window in the back came down about 2 inches, and a little finger kind of stuck out there and kind of waved to the auctioneer to come over, and he came over, and this envelope was slid out, and the window went back up, and the auctioneer opened up the envelope and looked at it and called the owner over and showed it to him, and they talked a little bit. They wrote a little bit note on it, and then they walked back over to the limousine. The window came down a couple inches. They stuck the envelope back in, waited a second for the person to read it, and the limousine took off. The auctioneer walked up, and it was like 5 minutes before the auction was to start at 11 o'clock. And he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, this auction is concluded. The property's been sold." So it was one of the Panther football players that was making the investment. He didn't want people to know who he was. Of course, the limousine kind of threw that off. But we see situations like that too. So that's
there are some exciting things can happen in auction events. I'll tell you something that noticeably that happened out here in the Midwest within the last couple of years. There was, and this is a this can be a problem in the auction industry, where you have companies that they start to take ownership of that auction, and sometimes they forget who they're working for. You have to remember, as an auctioneer, this is not your auction. This is that seller's auction. And you're no different than, you know, their attorney or a plumber or a contractor or a service company. You're providing auction services to them, but that seller still owns the property and owns that auction. It's their event. They had an auction company. A gentleman came to them, and he made an offer. He wrote it up on a purchase contract and brought an offer to the auction company, and they said, "No, if you want to participate, you have to come to the auction." So he waited, and he came to the auction. He was not the successful bidder, and he filed a complaint with the State Real Estate Commission because, as you know, unless it's explicitly written into your listing agreement out there, you have to present all offers to that seller, all, you know, unless they've instructed you otherwise. Obviously, a seller can instruct you, I don't want any offer, but he failed to do that. And it ended up resulting in the auctioneer losing his real estate license. They held him to task on that. And that, you know, these people were pretty serious about they didn't get the property bought.
Sure.
When they made the offer to the seller, because it wasn't even presented to that seller. So I think they set out to maybe kind of prove a point in the industry that even if you're in the auction business, if you get those offers ahead of the auction, you're still bound to present those to your seller unless you've been instructed in writing otherwise.
Right, and I would still present it. Say, look, I know you told me you didn't want to, but by the way, the guy just offered you $50,000 over what we said is the reserve, which I want to speak about too. You have auctions where you reserve, and you have auctions that are absolute. Why and what? What's the difference, and why would you choose one over the other?
Well, you know, we'll go back to the earlier conversation we had about ability. First off, selling something absolute, as it's written in the Uniform Commercial Code, it's stated expressly in there that that property is being presented to the marketplace with no limiting condition or circumstance. If I have a home or a farm and I still have $115,000 of debt load on it, clearly that's a limiting condition or circumstance. So unless I have the ability, the cash ability, to pay that note off and I can sell it regardless of price, then I may not have the ability to have an absolute auction. That has come up. That's been presented as, and that case has been argued, and it's been awarded on the side of the plaintiff out there, which in some instances are arguing that they had an absolute auction that wasn't truly absolute. There's been damage suits that have been awarded to those people that are the plaintiffs in court cases.
Right.
So I think first and foremost, when you talk to people about having a reserve auction or an absolute auction, you have to look at their ability. Do they even have the ability to make that decision? Then you look at the product they have to offer, what their motivation is, if they're still fishing for some certain price, if they want some price discovery out of it, or if they're truly in a bind and they say, I'm willing to sell this regardless of what it brings. I don't really have a choice. I have to sell this property on this date and time, or X is going to happen to me.
Right.
That may be a candidate for an absolute sale.
Won't you see this in judicial sales a lot?
Known of a fact in the auction business, a lot of court-ordered sales that have a clause in them that has it forces a return of sale, where the court still maintains the right to authorize sale after the fact. They have to bring the findings from the auction back to the court. Like in the U.S. bankruptcy court, you may have a bankruptcy auction. It's going to sell that day, but it's selling subject to confirmation by the court.
Right.
It's been argued in court that that's a limiting condition or circumstance. That can't technically be called an absolute auction because that bankruptcy judge, he could deny that sale. And if you present it to the market and it doesn't change hands, then you have a problem.
But that's where you see like the 10-day upside bids, right?
Yes, sir.
Where they'll have to do an additional 5% to outbid, and every 10 days, you know, if there's additional offers that meet that criteria, then that raises the price of the bid. And that continues until no one else bids and the last one wins the auction bid.
That's correct.
So
yeah.
So on a reserve, quickly, you know, when do you disclose the reserve? Do you disclose the reserve? When do you decide what the reserve is? Is that done weeks before? Is that done 5 minutes before the auction? Can that change during the course of the marketing and trying to see who's there and who's bidding?
I would say that the vast majority of, and that's either a published reserve or a non-published reserve, the vast majority of reserve auctions are non-published, and that is basically the seller is maintaining the right to accept or reject the high bid after the auction concludes. So
Right. They're
holding on to the right that I'm going to sell the property, but I still have my hand on the trigger whether I'm going to sell this or not, depending on how successful the auction is.
So,
if it's a published reserve, you'll find a lot of times that's trying to achieve, it's a marketing message that says, at or above this price, we're guaranteeing you a sale. You know, $330,000, you know, previously listed for $800,000, starting bid of $330,000, and it sells to the highest bidder above that. Well, that's a published reserve price. That the seller is not going to sell it less than $300,000, but anything above that, they're telling the consumer it's going to change hands.
And that reserve, do you have to announce when the reserve is hit when during the auction process, or is that required?
You know, it's not required, and I think that auctioneers do that more often than not because you have an accelerant to your event when you can basically guarantee a sale. You have a little bit of that unknown. People have came and they're prepared to bid on a property and they start to run out of gas, and you hit that threshold and you say, ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to know the reserve price has been hit. The property is going to be sold today. Sometimes you're throwing a little fuel on the fire to kind of get the energy started in the room because you've achieved that unknown mark out there. And they say, well, I'm going to bid one or two more times. You know, I can actually win this today.
Right. Cool.
The other thing that, Lou, is an important note is all auctions. Now, this is with the exception to the state of Louisiana. They're actually the opposite of this, but every other state in the U.S., all auctions are deemed to be with a reserve unless it's expressly stated otherwise in the advertising. And what that means, if you see any auction advertising that says estate auction, farm auction, public auction, online auction, anything like that, this just open kind of connotation that we're having an auction, that's deemed to be that the seller is maintaining their right to accept or reject the high bid. It's with reserve.
Okay.
You change the context that when you call it an absolute auction or selling with no minimum reserves, sells absolute to the highest bidder. Now you're telling the consumer that it's not a reserve auction. It's going to sell the day of the sale.
Well, except in the judiciary where the judge gets an opportunity to counter that.
That is correct. And if you're in the state of Louisiana, it's polar opposite of what I just told you.
Gotcha.
All auctions are deemed to be absolute unless it's stated that they're with reserve in the advertising.
Okay. With about 3 or 4 minutes left, let's talk about land because this is a land show. When I market land, I teach taking large tracts of land and actually breaking it up on paper, and certain jurisdictions let you do that. Like in North Carolina, as long as we stay 10 acres or more, we don't have to get the government involved. And then we have minor subdivisions, either 3 or 4 lots on state roads that can be part of that, and then additional acreage broken up, 10 acres or more. So I have a track record around here. I just finished one last year. It was 140 acres with a parcel on the north side that was 15 acres and a parcel on the east side that was 17 acres and then a rectangle block of the balance. And they had an appraiser on it of $4,025 an acre, $600,000. And I broke the property up on paper, and I call it flex property. So when the buyer comes, not on the 15 or the 17 because they were kind of standalones, but I had like a 28-acre track and a 32-acre track and a 40-acre track and like that. So when a buyer comes, they say, well, you know, I can't buy the 28 acres. Would you sell me 25? Or I'd like to get the water, more of the water sewer or more road frontage. Would you sell me 30? So as long as it doesn't mess up what's available, you know, we go ahead and contract that subject to survey and so on. So in the auction business, we can break property up too in certain jurisdictions, and we can do what's called multipar, where we actually have more than one parcel. It's one large parcel, but there'd be more than one parcel. And there's a whole game around that in the auction business, which is a lot of fun.
That multi-parcel bidding, in my opinion, and it's not the perfect fit for every property, but any time that there is a division of property and you're giving that consumer, that buying audience, options to buy that property in a multitude of configurations that best suits their needs, there's no better solution in the marketplace. Because buyers are in full control, it gives them the opportunity to bid on what they came to buy, and if they happen to get outbid on that, the auction's still running, they have the ability to shift that their sights over on their second choice or their third choice in that auction. You talk about maximizing the results at the end of the day. That is
it's beautiful.
Scientifically or strategically, that is by far and away the best strategy out there for large divestitures of land.
That's my favorite type of auction. I love it. I love the excitement, and I love the challenge of it, and it's really, really fun. So
we had a great auction on a historic ranch a little over a year ago in Winter Park, Colorado. We helped one of our offices out there with an old legacy ranch. It had some senior position water rights, on a major river. Had a lot of different kind of tracks. Some of them were up the side of a mountain, some were in the bottoms. And we cut that into, I want to say, 18, 19 tracks and sold that. Pre-auction estimates were around that $6.5 million. Sold for $8.9 million.
There you go.
That's a great testament to how multi-parcel bidding platforms can better serve that client.
Okay, I'm going to give you a minute. Let's just, last thing you want to talk about that we haven't, and then we'll let you give your information on how they can get in touch with you. We want to make sure we do that.
Well, I can't speak for Trina, but I can tell you we're excited to be on the show today for United Country Auction Services. We tend to wear multiple hats here in at the corporate offices. We're based in Kansas City. One of the things we didn't talk about, but you can check it out, is I also am a co-owner of an oil and gas marketing firm. It's called Mineral Marketing, and it's very easy to find, mineralmarketing.com. I started that firm with my brother quite a few years ago, and we work in almost every major oil and gas play inside of the continental United States. We have either helped with lease negotiation or the outright sale of mineral interest, both producing and non-producing minerals. So that, you know, on top of that, I'm easy to find. We'll give a little bit of a plug in here while we've got the chance. United Country Real Estate Auction Services. I'm the president of Auction Services. You can call me direct at 816-420-6237. Again, that's 816-420-6237. And you can check us out at the initials United Country, UCAuctionServices.com. You can go to that website, and I'll let Trina give her contact info.
Yeah, and you can reach me at that same phone number, basically. It's 623, you said 7, right?
Yeah.
I'm 253, so 816-420-253. TheSaleRing.com if you want to check out our podcast. UC Auction Services for our auctions. What else? Sean Terrell or S. Terrell at UnitedCountry.com or T. Turner at UnitedCountry.com if you want to email us.
Fabulous guest, fabulous show. Thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests or topics you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate them. All questions are welcome, and all our guests may be emailed with your questions or concerns as well. This show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source for land education. All of our shows after their broadcast this morning will be downloaded on the master website, www.letstalkland.net, also Podbeam and Spotify. My email is lou@mylandpro.com. My cell number is 336-669-1405. Rodney, how do they get us here at the station?
Well, they can go to our website, Lou. They can go to WKTE1090.com. And also, they can download the Simple Radio app and hear us anywhere in the world and the universe.
Oh, you did that.
Yeah.
Oh, you got me this time. Okay.
Yeah.
And we're Beach Music and Oldies. We've gotten several recognitions.
That's right. Nominated 5 years in a row as being the top radio station for Beach and Oldies.
Beach, and we only play happy music.
That's right. Only happy music.
Happy music. Yeah. And you got a nice award.
Yeah, I got the Reader's Choice Award for 2019, Announcer of the Year.
Well, congratulations, Wanda Wine.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us.